So I hope you can see the picture here, the slide. And you see I have chosen a different background. It's red. The other backgrounds were quite pleasing and comforting, but we are dealing here with Revelation 17. And in Revelation 17, you have an animal which is scarlet, and there is a horse sitting on that animal which is also scarlet. So I choose a black background so that we are set in the right mood. Let's read this complex text, and people say this is one of the most difficult parts in Scripture, and indeed it is, and if you read that, your mind is going to spin. And the angel said to me, "Why do you wonder? I tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss and goes, this is literally translated, and goes to destruction, and those who dwell on the earth, whose names has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast and that was and is not and will come." Now, this is not the only thing. There's more in the chapter. And actually, the heading for this lecture is the beast of Revelation 17, a suggestion. So I'm not just talking about everything in this chapter, but I will be focusing on the beast. Now, there are important questions that come up. For example, is the sea beast of Revelation 13 identical with the beast of Revelation 17, or does the beast of Revelation 17 present a different power? Secondly, what is the time frame of the vision? Does John describe events from a first century perspective, or is the point of reference to be found later, and John is placed there in the spirit? Another question, are the description of the beast in Revelation 17:8, namely it was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and goes to destruction, is this description parallel to the description of the heads which are depicted as five are fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, plus the eighth? Or do these different stages of the beast not directly coincide with the subdivisions of the heads? How should the heads be interpreted? So you see a number of questions. We don't have much time, so I will skip that and don't go through these different interpretations of preterists. Let me just mention, preterists normally see Rome here represented in the beast as well as in the harlot. And futurists see that to some extent too, but then all the events are later after this big gap that they have. We are dealing here predominantly with historicists, because we ourselves consider us historicists. And within our tradition, you have a number of interpretations which I briefly will mention. For example, this one, the was face of the beast represents pagan Rome. The is not face, the interim between pagan and papal Rome, and the will come face is papal Rome. Then here's another interpretation. The was period stands for papal Rome, and the will come face for its revival after the healing of the deadly wound. You see here in this case, Revelation 13 and 17 is taken together. Number three, the beast does not represent the papacy, but Satan. So we are talking about Satan when we talk about the beast in Revelation 13. What about the heads? They stand either for all political opposition to the people and the cause of God. So that's a more universal description, and details are not mentioned here. And a second interpretation, the five heads are the beasts of Daniel 7. So starting with Babylon, plus the little horn, that is the empire from Babylon to the papacy. The sixth head is the beast out of the abyss in Revelation 7, in Revelation 11, or the beast out of the earth, Revelation 13, and then the seventh head is a world organization or restored papacy. And another few, the five heads, the five that are fallen, are the world empires, Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. The sixth hat is pagan Rome, and the seventh is papal Rome or the beast out of the earth, either or, not both. What is the context of this vision? Very briefly, Revelation 15 and 16 contain the seven last plagues. The sixth plague describes the drying up of the Euphrates River, the river of Babylon, and Armageddon, whereas the seventh plague depicts the judgment on Babylon. And from Revelation 17 onward, this judgment is described in more details. And if you look closely there in chapter 17, right in the beginning, one of these bowl angels talks to John, and you have a close connection of the bowls or plagues with what is found there in chapter 17 and 18. Here's an outline of the chapter, and I hope you can see that. We have always a little narrative, so it starts with a narrative, John and one of these bowl angels, and then we have an angelic speech, and this speech talks about the judgment on the harlot. After that, there's a short snippet again of narrative. John is taken into the desert. And then you see two visions. Both are introduced with, and I saw. Therefore, I have subdivided that in two visions. The first one is dealing with the harlot and the beast with seven heads and ten horns. And she is the mother of all the harlots called Babylon the Great. Second vision, verse 6, first part, the harlot and the saints. Talks about the harlots and the saints. And after that, there is again a very short passage which contains narrative, and it says John was wondering what was going on and when he saw all of that. And then you have two more angelic speeches. In the first angelic speech, we hear about the beast, the heads, the horns, and the future battle against the lamb, the faithful. The second angelic speech here, which is actually the third, talks about the waters, the horns, and the beast's battle against the harlot. And the harlot is here, the great city. And in chapter 18, Babylon will be portrayed as a city, as you know, whereas in chapter 17, it's a harlot. So this end of the chapter introduces already chapter 18. Let's look at that briefly in apocalyptic literature. So we will make some observations briefly about the outline of chapter 17. In apocalyptic literature, the distinction between vision and angelic speeches is important, and Gerhard Fundel has pointed that out for the book of Daniel too. In a vision, a prophet may move freely in time and location. The interpretation of the vision, however, has to relate to the prophet's time and place in order to make sense. Otherwise, there is no way of how to interpret that. Now, in this first speech, the angel promises John that the judgment on the harlot will be shown to him. That's right in the beginning there of chapter 17. However, the next two short visions that he sees do not spell out this judgment on the harlot, but they furnish additional information on the harlot and her activities, and then mention the beast. And the two following angelic speeches do not only explain most powers mentioned before, with the exception of the beast, but also elaborate on the judgment referred to in the first angelic speech. The first vision stresses the harlot as Babylon the Great, whereas the last speech, we mentioned that already, talks about her as the city. We will go on. With regard to final activities, we find a stronger emphasis on the horns. So we'll mention that again. Look through the chapter. At the end of the chapter, the heads are not mentioned again. You have just the beast and you have the horns. The beasts are not directly mentioned for being involved in this final battle. Now, this is here again an outline of the two angelic speeches. And you see some more details with these two angelic speeches. So in verses 7 through 14 and 15 and 18, you have an introduction, and it talks about the beast first, and then you have this formula, which you have seen. Then it goes on to the heads. The formula which you have seen is missing, but it says, the heads, there are seven mountains and are seven kings. You move on, You have the horns, and again the formula, which you have seen. And then you have again an identification. The horns are seven kings. You go on to the third angelic speech. There are the waters. Again, the formula, which you have seen, and the explanation, they are people, and so on. After that, the ten horns and the beast, which you have seen, they are not, again, stressed here any longer, but the horns have been explained anyway, and you notice here already that the beast is not explained. The harlot, which you have seen, and again, an explanation, the harlot is the great city. So, let's summarize that briefly. The harlot, the waters, the heads, and the horns are identified. So another symbol is given, or whatever, they are identified. In each case, the same phrase is used. The only entity which is not directly identified is the beast itself. So in the beast, we miss this phrase, the beast is this and that, okay? This is missing. Whereas all the other entities have that. Although we hear about its activities, the beast is not further explained. This fact may be important for the understanding of the beast. Whereas the judgment of the harlot is described in great detail in chapter 17 through 19, the judgment of the beast is not found in Revelation 17. Let's look at one of the many problems. One of the problems that expositors of Revelation encounter is that the harlot and the beast seem to point to the same historical identity. Now, no matter what you do, if you take a preterist approach or if you take a historicist approach, you end up with the same problem. Namely, let's go with preterists. Preterists would say Babylon, the harlot Babylon, reminds us of Rome, and she's sitting on seven hills, and this is Rome. But on the other hand, you have the harlot, yeah, and the beast with the seven heads represents these seven mountains, and these seven mountains point to Rome. In other words, the harlot as well as the beast are somehow identified with Rome. Now, if you take a historicist approach, and we would say, let's go with papal Rome, and say the harlot, to some extent, includes papal Rome, then you look at the beast, and you have seen these different views that that I have presented before. You say the beast is also papal Rome. But that creates a problem, to some extent at least. And if you go through the heads, then some of the heads, we have seven heads, and then we say one of the heads is also papal Rome, or maybe two even, or three. So you have papal Rome in the heads, in the harlot, and in the beast. You see the problem? Because at the end of chapter 17, this very same beast and its horn kill the prostitute. And so you have the paradoxical situation that Rome seems to bring about the downfall of Rome. So Rome kills herself. And the question is that very likely or not? We move on and look a little closer now to the beast out of the abyss. First of all, we notice that this is a parody of God, because this description of the beast in Revelation 17:8, as was and is not and will come, reminds us of God the Father, because God the Father is called He who was and who is to come. Now, in the book of Revelation, you have various titles and description of God and Jesus, and some of them overlap. Some of them are used for both. For example, Alpha and Omega is used for both, Father and Son. But there are some titles which are used for God the Father only. And this is one of the titles. The title He Who Was and is to come, and this comes in various variations, is a title for God the Father. So this description of the beast, it was and is not and will come, reminds to some extent of God the Father. And so we see it is a parody of God. Yeah, here in the next paragraph you find actually what I just have said. So Revelation 17, in Revelation 17, the beast imitates God the Father, whereas the sea beast of Revelation 13 is an imitation of Jesus Christ. Now, I cannot elaborate that much, but you have the same language there for the sea beast as an imitation of Jesus Christ, because the beast was slaughtered. The same word is used for Jesus as for the sea beast, and it was raised, and both have authority and so on. If you look at the language, this is recognized with those who study the book of Revelation, that the sea beast in Revelation 13 is an imitation of Jesus. Here you have an imitation of God the Father. Now let's look at some elements which are common between the sea beast and the scarlet beast. Now both of them have 7 heads and 10 horns. In both cases, blasphemies are mentioned. In both cases, you find opposition to God or to Jesus and the followers of Christ. Both are called beasts, and there you have people that are wondering what is going on. So in any case, this has to be accepted. Between sea beast and scarlet beast, there are some common elements. What are the differences between the two beasts? The sea beast has crowns on its horns, but the beast of Revelation 17 has no crowns. Then the color of the sea beast is not mentioned, but the other beast's color is mentioned. It's scarlet. This is our background, okay? Slides. The sea beast comes out of the sea, but the scarlet beast comes out of the abyss. Now, time elements are also mentioned with both beasts, but they vary and are quite different. The sea beast is dependent on the dragon, but no such thing is said about the scarlet beast. The sea beast, as we just have said, is an imitation of Christ, while the scarlet beast is a parody of God the Father. So what you find is you have similarities, but you have also differences. Now next we have to compare the dragon and the scarlet beast and see what the similarities and differences are. Now in this case again you have 7 heads and 10 horns. There is a similar color, and one scholar has said this is actually the same color, it's just different it's just a different shade of color, but basically it's the same color. There's opposition specifically to Jesus, and in both cases you have contact to a woman. So these are the common elements. What are the differences? Well, the scarlet beast comes out of the abyss, the dragon is cast out of heaven. However, coming out of the abyss is a later phase of the beast's career. The dragon has 7 crowns on his heads, the scarlet beast has no crowns. The dragon is also called serpent, but not beast, as the scarlet beast is. Okay, so you find similarities and differences with both. Still, we have to proceed a little more and have to ask, who is this beast? What we do next is we take a look at the word abyss in the book of Revelation. And this word abyss is mentioned 7 times. And I just will give you a list and then we will spend a moment to go through that. In Revelation 19, 9 verse 1, there is a star fallen from heaven, and this star has the key of the abyss, and when he opens that, locusts come out and torture human beings. In Revelation 9 verse 2, this is the same situation, the star opened now the pit of the abyss. Revelation 9:11, the king of the locusts is the angel of the abyss called Apollyon. This is the same context, this is all the fifth trumpet. And in Revelation 11:7, the beast which comes out of the abyss kills the true witnesses. This was number 4. We have 3 more to go. In chapter 17:8, which is our text, the beast on which the great prostitute sits comes out of the abyss. In Revelation 20 verse 1, an angel comes from heaven with the key to the abyss, and this angel binds Satan in the abyss for 1,000 years, Revelation 20 verse 3. Now, what about the abyss? The Hebrew word tehom, rendered as deep or as waters or the deep of the flood, is almost regularly translated with this Greek term abyssos. The term is found 36 times in the canonical books of the Septuagint, for the first time, the deep or the abyss, the Tehom, occurs in Genesis 1 verse 2, where it describes the situation when the sea was not yet separated from the dry land. Now, after the separation, you have the sea and you have the earth, and they become visible. And it is precisely from these two areas that have become visible that the two beasts of Revelation 13 come forward and arise. The sea beast comes out of the sea, and the other beast comes out of the earth. In the Septuagint, the abyss is associated with water, with the flood, or the sea, in the vast majority of the cases, and occurs in the singular as well as in the plural. However, there are also texts in the Septuagint in which the abyss may be contrasted with the sea, or is described as the depth of the earth, from which the psalmist hopes to be brought up again. And in Psalm 148, verse 7, the dragons and all abyssoi are associated. Now we have to move to the New Testament and ask ourselves, how is this term used in the New Testament? It's found 7 times in Revelation, 9 times in total in the New Testament. So we have 2 more places. One is in Luke and the other one is in Romans. In Romans 10:7, the abyss is a symbol of the realm of death. And according to Luke 8, verse 31, demons asked Jesus not to be sent to the abyss. Thus, here the abyss is linked to satanic agency and is the place where demons may dwell. And therefore, Westermann notes correctly, saying early Judaism and the New Testament shift the meaning of Tehom and Abyssos to the depth of the earth as the prison of spirit and as the world of the dead. The sea is not specifically linked to the abyss in the New Testament, which is also true for the book of Revelation. And therefore, my suggestion is to keep sea and abyss separate in the book of Revelation. Now, let's briefly look at these texts in the book of Revelation. There is not too much time. I will try to be as short as possible. The first text was Revelation 9, verse 2 and 1. The fallen star has been interpreted by some as a positive power, by others as a negative power. We cannot go into that. But when we talk about a fallen star, a number of Old Testament and New Testament texts come into our mind. For example, in Job 38:7, in the Masoretic text, the sons of God are called morning stars. Now, the Septuagint changes that, and instead of talking about sons of God, it talks about angels. Okay? So the Septuagint, the fallen the star here, the son of God, the morning star, son of God, according to the Masoretic text, and Septuagint are angels. Job 1 verse 6 describes how Satan among these sons of God, Masoretic text, or angels, Septuagint, approached God. A falling morning star is found in Isaiah 14 verse 12, and we know that very well, this passage. The Babylonian king is addressed with language that sets him apart from ordinary mortals, but according to Watts, the poem is a simile to picture the fall and disgrace of the tyrant and is not specifically tailored for the king of Babylon. And the New Testament uses this text and these concepts to point to Satan, as do the church fathers. And there are a number of New Testament texts which we could mention. In 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14, we hear that Satan disguises himself as the angel of light. According to Luke 10, verse 18, Jesus saw Satan fallen from heaven, and he may have deliberately alluded to Isaiah 14, verse 12. And there are a number of other texts. We also find that in extra canonical literature that stars are angels, and then you have this concept of being fallen. Now, if you look at the word to fall in the book of Revelation, let me mention that briefly. The verb occurs 23 times in Revelation. 9 times it refers to falling down to worship God or mistakenly worship an angel, and it has positive connotations when the worship is directed toward God. In addition to worship, the term to fall is associated with the fall of stars, mountains, sun and heat, cities, Babylon, and the five heads of the beast which we are looking at. In Revelation 2 verse 5, Jesus criticizes the church in Ephesus for having fallen away from first love. So obviously, if we look at that term in the book of Revelation, the term has negative connotation, this term to fall, and is found in judgment context when the issue is not worship. And consequently, having fallen in Revelation 9 verse 11 should also be understood in a judgment setting. Concerning the suggestion to identify the star of Revelation 9 verse 1 with the angel of Revelation 20, which some people have done, some say Revelation 9 verse 1, this angel which has the key to the abyss, is the same angel that you find in chapter 20, where the angel comes and locks Satan in the abyss. Farmer has here perceptively observed discontinuity instead of continuity, saying the remarkable contrast between this star's action and that of the angel in Revelation 21 through 3 has to be noticed. He held the key to the abyss. The angel, he goes on, the angel locked the deceptive dragon in the abyss. The fallen star, however, unlocked the abyss, unleashing a demonic horde. So in Revelation 9 verse 1, we hear about one fallen star only, according to chapter 8 verse 20, a great star whose actions have extremely negative effects. It seems best to understand this star as Satan, who, according to Revelation 12, verse 7 through 9, was cast out of heaven. Now, then you find that next one here in chapter 9, verse 11. It's the same context. Now, you can dispute if that is the same situation or not. I would assume it is. Expositors agree, more or less, that this king of the locusts and angel of the abyss should be understood as Satan, and you have also the word Abaddon and Apollyon. The word Abaddon is used a number of times in the Old Testament. Hebrews 2 verse 14 reminds us that it is the devil who has the power of death. And by the way, this word Abaddon in the Old Testament is also used in context of Sheol and the grave, and in the New Testament then Hades. Ephesians reminds us, Paul reminds us, that there's a struggle against the rulers and powers, against the forces of this darkness, and so on. The word Apollyon is derived from apoleia, destruction, and the destruction that Satan brings along or intends to afflict is described very clearly in Revelation 12, where Satan's fall also is depicted. So, some expositors would say chapter 9 verse 1 and 2 and chapter 9, 11 should be kept separately. I wouldn't do that, but in any case, whatever you do, it is clear that the abyss is linked somehow to Satan. Go one further, chapter 11 verse 7, the beast which comes out of the abyss and by means of the French Revolution temporarily kills God's two witnesses, the scriptures of the Old and New Testament, seems to be Satan again. This is a deceptive power here in Revelation 11 verse 7. And you see the beast out of the earth, the beast which is found in chapter 13, begins as a deceptive activity around of the time when the sea beast has his deadly wound. Whereas here in this situation, only after the deadly wound, this situation happens, namely the destruction of the beast. There are some other, in chapter 20, let's go on here briefly, you have more or less a great reversal. So what I would say, let me summarize that here. I have the impression that in chapter 9 and chapter 11, when we talk about the abyss, we have the context of demonic elements and the context of Satan. In Revelation 20, verse 1 and 3, it's very clear that we are talking about Satan, but a reversal is taking place. Satan's power to open the abyss is taken from him, and Satan himself is bound by an angel and confined to the abyss for 1,000 years. So it seems that Revelation 17:8 points to this very situation, and that we find in Revelation 20, and explains the cryptic saying about the beast of Revelation 17. So apparently all references to the abyss in Revelation have to do with Satan, the beast which was and is not and will come out of the abyss and goes to destruction, and on which Babylon sits, is Satan who works through political powers. Let's briefly go to the next slide. We have different phases here, and you can see it's three times we find that these different phases. The second phase has the last element missing, and this is obvious because it says the people of the inhabitants of the world are wondering what's going on. They are not aware yet of that this beast goes to destruction, so they are wondering. How should we understand these different phases? At what time do they take place? Does the is not phase describe the time of John, the first century, our present situation, or the future? These are different questions, and I have to hurry and go over that briefly. So the it was phase should refer to historic time, while from the is not phase onward, eschatology is in view. Some reasons. First, the is not phase can be understood as a future development because in Revelation the present tense oftentimes stands for the future, and you have that actually a little later when it says it goes in destruction, using the present tense instead of the future tense. Revelation 7 is a description of the future judgment on the harlot, and Dr. Strand argues to seek fulfillment in history. For example, for the is not phase, when that phase is obviously a view of judgment, is illogical. Keep in mind the entire context. Context of Revelation 17 is judgment. Number three, it's not possible that the harlot sits on a beast that is not. Remember, the beast was, is not, is to come out of the abyss and goes to destruction. How can the harlot sit on a beast presently when the beast is not? Neither is it possible that heads and horns exist when the beast does not exist. So look at the faces, next slide please, of the beast. So the beast was not. We said this is the historical time, and this would refer to Revelation 12, for example. The devil exists and worked. It is not. This would refer to the time after the second coming. He is imprisoned in the abyss. No deception is possible. Then it is about to come out of the abyss, would be after the millennium. He is released, gathers the resurrected opponents of God and attacks the holy city and goes into destruction. This is after the millennium when Satan is thrown into the lake of fire and will perish. So what I'm claiming here is that you have in Revelation 17, first of all, Satan in view as the beast, and you have not his fate finally described, you have just a hint, but the full description is found in chapter 20. There are some more characteristics of the beast which also point in the direction of Satan, but we will not deal with that. Let's go briefly to the seven heads. In Scripture, symbolic mountains stand for empires. I have given some reasons here, so we would say these kings are empires. We have to go back to Daniel and see that. Now, some people say the beast and the heads have to be parallel. I don't know if you can see that. I'm sorry. It's not very easy to read. So they say the beast, it was, coincides with five are fallen of the heads. Then the beast, it is not, would coincide with one of the heads is. Will come out of the abyss is the other that has not yet come and goes into destruction is the eighth. I do not think that this works well, because you have really a problem here. Whereas one of the heads is, the beast is not, if you take that parallel. You see, and there are some other problems with that. Strand correctly states that though John sees the vision from the is not phase, namely the judgment phase, the heads and horns are historical identities belonging to the was phase. When is the time of the one is? We are dealing with the heads now. one is. A natural understanding of Revelation 17 verse 10 seems to imply that at the time of when John wrote the book of Revelation, the sixth kingdom was ruling. Now, Revelation is addressed to Christians in the first century, and probably they would have understood it this way. When they were living, that was the time when the sixth head was ruling. If we assume that the sixth head was not ruling when Revelation was penned and John had been taken to another time, then we are not able to come up with a definite interpretation of Revelation 17. It's that just conjecture. So if we then go from there, it would mean that at the time of John, five heads were fallen and one existed. The existing one was without doubt the Roman Empire. So the five preceding kingdoms would then begin with Egypt, continue with Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. Now this can be deduced logically once we have found the kingdom of the time of John. But we have also clues within the book of Revelation, because the first power mentioned in the book of Revelation is Egypt. Revelation 11 verse 6. In Egypt, although that is a symbolic Egypt, the Lord was crucified. And remember, those who have taken classes with Dr. Strand, maybe he talks about the exodus of Egypt motif in the book of Revelation, and I don't have time to go into that. So if that's true, we start with Egypt and go on, and at the time of John are there with pagan Rome, then the sixth head would be the Roman Empire, and the seventh, the papacy. Now there is an Adventist expositor, Dr. Reynolds, and he says the seventh head would be the beast of Revelation, the beast coming out of the earth. That is another option, which I personally don't think is so likely. There is one problem which I want to allude briefly to. It says this seventh beast is there and it remains a little while. How can that apply to the papacy? This word, a little while, is found four times in Revelation 2:14, and in 3:4 it describes the quantity of things and persons, whereas in Revelation 12 and 17 it refers to time. The short time which, according to Revelation 12 verse 12, Satan has after Christ's crucifixion consists in the meantime of about 2 millennia. Okay, did you get this? He has little time, comes down on the earth, but this is almost 2 millennia now. So therefore, we can say a little while in Revelation takes on a meaning of its own. For instance, cast out of heaven, Satan knows that his time is short. The short time ought not to be taken literally but symbolically, much the same as the reference to 1260 days, 42 months, and 3.5 years, and they have to be understood figuratively. So in other words, there is no problem to identify that beast here with papal Rome, although it was ruling that long. We have not been able to talk about the horns, and I have to conclude that because Larry is sitting here and forcing me to discontinue. I have written 45 pages here, and I'm just desperately trying to summarize what we have said. Now let me just say and stop here at this very point. At the very end, if you look at all of that, it seems to be a cruel picture that is portrayed there in Revelation. But if you read there, it's talking also about Jesus, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And it talks about those who are with him. And this is a message not just of blood and whatever, it's a message of comfort. There will be a battle. If there will be Armageddon, there will be a battle against Jesus the King, there will be a second battle against the harlot, evil destroys itself. And that's all true, but there are those who are with the King of Kings, and they are in his hands, and they are comforted and kept. And this is a wonderful message that we have to keep in mind, in spite of all the other things.
Eckhart Miller, he's a dear friend of mine. We studied together at Andrews, and Eckhart, I don't know, there was a single week that you and me, we didn't sit and discuss about some issues in the book of Revelation. And it's so nice to have a friend that we studied the book of Revelation together. Of course, we disagree on some points, but we are still friends and brothers, in Christ. And what I like about our pioneers, they disagreed on many issues, but they would sit together and study the issues. And I believe that this is the opportunity that we have together. For the first time, I read something from Eckhart about Revelation 17. It was his newsletter from BRI. And believe me, I had a long list of questions to ask him at this moment. Then he sent to me, we are talking about paper, 45 pages. Eckhart, it was an excellent paper. So much advancement with regard to what I read in BR letter. So I had to cross many questions that I wanted to ask you. I really appreciate your discussion on the Abyss. It's a great, you spend many pages discussing that. I really like what you have, that those seven kings are actually seven kingdoms, that the many Seventh-day Adventists, they are deriving many different interpretations on the basis of that they are kings, seven popes, literal popes, etc. I also appreciate that you are taking at the sixth head, the sixth head as the starting point for understanding of those seven heads. So the kingdom that was at the time of John 5, they had to precede. I really appreciate that. And when I read your paper, I said, praise God, praise God, praise God. And I came to the last few pages, and I would like just to explain our disagreement. You made that your paper is a suggestion, and I am making a suggestion, okay? And probably we have to make more effort and to study it. I have one question, it's a major problem that I have. Satan in the book of Revelation is never referred to as a beast. Starting with Revelation 12, all up to Revelation 20, Satan is always dragon. And I'd like now to make another suggestion. We have here to deal with literal characteristic of the book of Revelation. In the book of Revelation, we have always John hears something in the vision. When he turns to see, he's something else. What he heard, and now what he sees, is one and the same thing from different perspective. Revelation 5, John hears that it's the lion, what he sees is the lamb. In Revelation 7, John hears 144,000 number, then John sees the great multitude. What we have in Revelation 17, John hears that the great prostitute sits on many waters. When John turns to see, he doesn't see many waters on which the prostitute sits. The prostitute sits on the beast. This leads to the conclusion that the waters and the beast is one and the same entity. But when we go further to the text, it's verse 11, 10, 11, it says that the beast sits on seven mountains, which are seven kingdoms. So the waters, the beast, and the mountains should be one and the same entity. Then when we go to verse 15 of chapter 17, the angel defines that the waters on which the prostitute sits are nations, multitudes, so secular and political powers of this world. So the beast, waters, and seven heads, that are seven kingdoms, are actually one the same thing, of course, defined from different perspective. So this leads to a conclusion, and I would like to suggest, that the beast of Revelation 13, Revelation 17, it's the same beast. And I'm so glad that you pointed to those differences, of which probably the major one is that the beast of Revelation 13 comes from the sea. The beast of Revelation 17 comes from the abyss. And what is the reason for that? Because we, in Revelation 13, and sometimes with Seventh-day Adventists, I think we err, when we take Revelation 13, the first beast, to discuss the end time activities of this beast. Revelation 13 does not discuss the end time activities of the first beast, of the sea beast. It discusses only the medieval activities of the beast. What we mean, until the mortal wound was given. The only verse that talks about the future, everything is in the past. The only verse that talks about the future is that the entire world will worship the beast, and that's the end. Then John describes the next beast is the beast from the land. So I'd like to suggest that the beast of Revelation 13 is the beast, the activities of the beast until the mortal wound. Then the beast is killed. And in Revelation 17, we have the same beast that comes into existence at the activities of the beast after the healing of the mortal wound. And that's the reason for the difference, that the beast of Revelation 13 comes out of the sea, but in Revelation 17, the beast comes out of the abyss. And you defined excellent in your paper that actually the abyss means, it can mean the place of the dead and the dwelling place of the demons. The beast was killed. That's why the beast is referred to as the beast that was. And then the beast received the mortal wound. Then the beast, it's out of the existence, in the abyss there. And then the beast will come when it comes out of the abyss. And I think this explains why the seventh beast that is the papacy, why it says that actually the eighth head that will come into existence is one of seven. Of course, John, in Greek, there is no word one, but it's applied there. So that the eighth is of seven. Why? Because it's the seventh head, because the seventh head received the mortal wound. The mortal wound will be healed. It's the same head, but actually it will be a new political power, a religious political power that will appear at the end of the history. And that's my suggestion. And now, since BRI people are here, I would like to make a suggestion that really we find the time that we talk about that. Because when I go and give seminars on the book of Revelation, I have regularly people come to me, and probably this is the reason why many Seventh Adventists, they have problems with seven heads. They said, if Revelation 13 is the papacy, Revelation 17 is the papacy, and many accepted that as a fact, they said, then how is possible that we have seven heads of that beast that is papacy, and one of those heads is the papacy? I don't know, it makes sense. And this reason why I give opportunity people to disagree with me, to criticize him. Because it seems to me that we oversimplified it. The way how I look at the beast is that the beast is not the papacy. Okay? The beast is actually the religious political system that Satan used from the time of Exodus, and you refer to those five kingdoms from Exodus. It's the religious political system that Satan has used from the time of Exodus, with the establishment of the church in the Old Testament times, until the time of the end. But please, I haven't finished yet. That beast was always active in the form of one of its heads. At the time of Moses, that beast was active as Egypt. So that beast was Egypt. Okay. In the time of Daniel, it was Babylon. That's why that beast was bad. During the medieval period, that beast was the papacy. Because it acted through the head of the beast exists only in the form of one of its heads. When the head is killed in Revelation 13, keep in mind that actually it was one of those heads received the mortal wound. What happens with the beast? The entire beast is dead because the beast exists only in the form of one of its heads. And that's why Revelation 17, the head is healed and the beast comes out of the abyss. And we have this time, not just the papacy from the medieval period, we have a Babylon, we have the Union, we have the papacy, a United States of America, we have different powers, secular, religious, political powers of this world united together, and they work at the end of time. This is just a suggestion. Miller, you did an excellent job. I really want to appreciate and congratulate, and this should be really published. Okay.
Thank you for these suggestions. The problem is with chapter 17, what I see, that it's very difficult. You have a lot of loose ends. And whichever system you use, it seems as if you cannot get down to the ground and tie all loose ends. I personally have the impression that the suggestion of what I have made solves some of these issues. I was not able to deal with, because of time reasons, with the eighth. I was not able to deal with the question that you have raised about the beast. Why is Satan not called beast otherwise in the book of Revelation. However, if you see the beast, for example, in Revelation 11 as Satan, who uses the French Revolution and political powers, then you have it there. Yeah, the question is, who is that beast in Revelation 11? Is it the same beast as the beast in Revelation 13? So there are many other things which have to be discussed and have to be further discussed. And I have called that a suggestion only because it should help us to look into these issues a little bit. Now, what I was not able to do is to give you an overview, and I don't know, it's probably not any longer on. Is it still on? No. You see, that Dr. Strand, years ago, has more or less developed that, but he has never written about it. And he has provided a graphic which follows precisely what I have shown you here. And it would have been nice to be able to show you that graphic. So what he says, basically, the beast that was is the historical beast. You go through historical time up to the coming of Jesus. The beast is not. That's during the millennium. The beast is after the resurrection of the millennium, and then it goes into destruction, also the millennium. The seven heads are during the time, historical time, and these are the kingdoms we agree about, starting with Egypt and so on, and the ten horns, they are then concurrent with the seventh head. Now this suggestion, which he never really has taken time to explain, but has just put it in a graphic, I felt very helpful, and when I looked at that and tried to study that, it seemed to me to make sense. Yeah, and therefore, thank you for your suggestions, but there's much more to say. If you're interested, you can read my paper, and I'm willing to share that paper with you.